Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. We have a great show for you today. Today, we will burn 18 NAACP cars and videotape it. Two caps and videotape it. We will videotape at 5:30 today. The NAACP is going down. It's burn, baby burn. We will burn all NAACP cars. We're asking 100,000 people who own a NAACP car to burn it. Matter of fact, the 350 NAACP cars that was bought by Whirlpool Corporation to overthrow the NAACP here in the city of Benton Harbor, we are burning their cars today. We're going to burn as many as possible every single week. The people are getting educated enough to understand that you do not allow a corporation like Whirlpool to come in and take over the NAACP, an organization that has been around over 100 years, an organization that has done nothing in the last 50 years. But we have an obligation. We have an obligation to hold them accountable for their action and their inaction. Too many times we have given the NAACP, Al Sharpton, Reverend Jesse Jackson, a free pass because nobody wants to attack them. When you're wrong, you're wrong. But what we're going to do, we're going to make them either put up or shut up. That's how we're going to deal with them. And we will not be intimidated by all the governor who's working with them to give them the power they have. As long as they don't do anything inside the community, they're okay. But we're here to tell you, to let you know that the NAACP is a sellout, and they're out of touch with the black community. So we're going to be talking about that. But also, today, we're going to have a couple of people on the show who's going to tell you about the surveillance that the government has been using for years to control us. Oh, yes, they have ways of controlling you from outside your house and through a microwave. They can do this. But I know that you don't believe it because it doesn't affect you. But you will be hearing about it today. You're going to hear from several people who's going to talk about this control thing that the governor had. I was watching a couple of videos last night and the night before in reference to it, and I could not believe what I was listening to. I was listening to something that's so incredible, but we know it's gone on today. But it's time that we do things, start working together, and stand up against this government. Because we have to do it, whether you like it or not. But on that note, let's listen to a little Martin Luther King.
So even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will they be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood? I have a dream that one day Even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racist, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted. Every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, tears of thee." Sweet land of liberty of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrims cried, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. So let freedom ring from the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire. Let freedom ring from the mighty mountains of New York. Let freedom ring from the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania. Let freedom ring from the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado. Let freedom ring from the pervasive slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands.
You are listening to the Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. I tell you, we are all set to videotape the burning of 18 NAACP membership cards and two hats. It will be on YouTube sometime tomorrow. But I'm happy today. I am so happy that we are here together. But listen, at 5:30 today, we're going to pause for about 5 minutes so we can videotape the burning of the 18 NAACP membership plus the two hats. But on that note, let me move on to 0423. Are you there? Reverend Pinckney here.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
How are you doing today?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm great.
Good. My name is Deborah. I'm in Wisconsin.
Yes.
And I'm a victim of domestic terrorism and torture using directed energy weapons.
Okay.
Radiation.
Well, tell us about it.
I certainly will. Radiation and electromagnetic torture begins with national security letters issued against an innocent citizen under false pretenses. Retaliation and revenge by someone in power, or someone simply does not like you who knows someone in power. For government research, different people are chosen because of their religion, race, or even gender. President Clinton apologized for testing radiation weapons on the public, which can be watched on YouTube. Some states have laws against using directed energy weapons, like Michigan. Why would a law be needed if they don't exist? Some states have laws against microchipping, like the state I live in, Wisconsin. Have you heard of Directive 5240.1-R? Procedure 13?
No.
Procedure 13, entitled Experimentation on Human Subjects for Intelligence Purposes. This can be done to people placed on these lists. This procedure applies to experimentation on human subjects. It means any research or testing involving human subjects that may expose them to permanent or temporary injury, including physical or psychological damage and damage to their reputation. Informed consent is to be obtained and experimentation done in accordance with guidelines issued by our great Department of Health and Human Services. Consent is to be obtained, however, thousands and thousands of us know that's not being done. No one has ever gotten my consent. One way this is being done is under the active denial system, which works by firing a high-powered beam of frequency waves at a target. Radiation burns caused are similar to microwave burns. The surface temperature of a target will continue to rise so long as the beam is applied at a rate dictated by the target's distance from the transmitter and with the beam's frequency and power level set by the domestic terrorist operating the weapon. Most test subjects reach their pain threshold within 3 seconds. We endure this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Police and fire departments work with the federal government, government contractors, corporations, universities, and into the private sector using students and watch groups to perpetrate this domestic terror on innocent citizens, which turns private citizens into criminals and traitors of the United States, usually based on a lie. To do this research, constant monitoring of the subject must be done, which is why subjects complain of stalking, wiretapping, and being watched in their homes. It's being done for money. It creates great revenue for cities, states, and communities. They want us to believe that these things are being done to us because of arguments with neighbors or filing complaints with police or complaints against the police. When in fact, reasons for their victimization is simply for testing by their government. I traveled to London in May to interview physics and radiation weapons expert Barry Trower regarding this human experimentation. He has thousands of documents pertaining to this, and it is being done worldwide, and it is proven to be done. And it can be Googled, Barry Trower, T-R-O-W-E-R, human experimentation, and you can watch the video for yourself. And when I say they, we mean government scientists working with university departments. And some things being used to mask this research are alien abductions and paranormal activity, making the subject believe these things are happening when in truth they're being done by these weapons. It's a horrible thing to be living through. I'm tired of it, and don't believe me, sir. While watch the interview. Ken Rhodes has sent many things to you to watch, and thank you so much for looking into that. We
absolutely
appreciate it.
Let me say this to you also. I have watched some of those videos that he have sent me, and they are remarkable. Matter of fact, I even witnessed a hearing. He was there, Ken Rhodes, but he was not able to speak. I saw that one. He was so upset that he could not even speak during the during the hearing. And I am shocked that is so many people.
Yeah.
You probably had over 100 people in that room.
Yeah, I was there, too. I was at the one in Washington, D.C., and spoke in front of the Presidential Bioethics Commission. That's what you're referring to.
Right,
and
absolutely.
Yes. Yeah, it's remarkable. I'm not sure why people find this so difficult to believe, and we've sent men to the moon.
Well, one reason why they find it difficult to believe because it don't happen. It haven't happened to them yet. See, once it happened to them, then they'll believe it. You can't,
yeah.
See, until something happened to you, you don't believe it. You don't believe it can happen. You see,
we're trying to make it
this government can do anything. They'll do anything they want, and their job is to control you at all costs.
Yes, this is mind control experimentation, sir. That's for sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. But listen, I'm going to thank you for your call, and I'm going to move on. And just hang on and just listen to what everybody else has to say.
I will, sir. Thank you so much. You have a good evening.
And you do the same.
Thank you.
5001, you're on.
Hi, my name is James Walbert. I am another victim of illegal implantation, electronic stalking, and illegal electronic tracking as well as eavesdropping. And in the year 2004, I had created a method and apparatus for sanitization of beverage cans. I carry 7 patents on it, as well as 2 documents disclosed to the government. Inside of 3 weeks of marketing the invention, about 3 or 4 days into the actual marketing of it, 3 weeks is about a time span period that I can actually put things together in. About 3 days afterwards, I had started receiving verbal face-to-face threats of either handing over the invention or I was going to become a victim of electronic harassment, implantation, and stalking. And, of course, I had never heard of the crime before, so I kind of blew him off. I thought that he might be a little, you know, he might be an individual to be concerned with, but nothing too threatening because I had never heard of the actual crime until it happened. But inside of 3 days of him telling me this, I went to sleep on a Friday evening, and I woke up on a Monday morning. I had been drugged. I was out for almost 72 hours straight. I woke up with a bloody ear. My left ear was bleeding so bad that it had actually stuck itself to my pillow. My beard had been singed all the way down to my skin, and the pain that was in my left ear was ridiculous. So I called into my job, and I told them I was going to be late, you know, so I went up to be checked out at a minor emergency center up here in Wichita, Kansas. Well, what they found down inside of my ear, the guy was very concerned about it, and he said if it gave me any more problems to come back to him. He said that he didn't recognize it being like any earwax or just commonalities. He didn't find any commonalities between his medical training and what he was seeing in my ear. So he sent me off to work, you know. Actually, he gave me an excuse for the day, but I went back to work the next day. Well, as it turns out, it stopped hurting, so I didn't necessarily forget about it, but what I started focusing on were vehicles that were following me everywhere I had went, and it was pretty spontaneous. I lead a normal life. I'm a maintenance technician by trade. You know, I live a normal life. I'm nobody special. I made a bunch of inventions that are worth a lot of money. So this is what actually instigated or provoked the attack. The guy had been very animate about investing in my inventions. I had turned him away for at least 6 or 8 weeks straight. I kept telling him, no, I don't want you to invest. You're a friend of the family, you know. You don't ever bring family and friends into this because this is how, you know, family and friendships, you know, usually end up dissolving is from being exposed to this type of activity. Well, them investing and losing money or it becoming successful and then trying to steal your money. Well, that's exactly what he was trying to do, and I had no clue what he was up to. I mean, he's the most unsuspecting individual. I would have, you know, I guarantee I would have never suspected that he would have done something quite this extreme. Well, I had gotten some suspicions. I had moved to Ohio, and I went ahead and moved 1,000 miles away because they were stalking me everywhere I went. So I was like, okay, then I found out they could actually see inside my home. Now, this is before I knew about the technology, but I was aware of some of the technology, but just not on such a concurring basis. I didn't keep up on it. So I moved 1,000 miles away from my home, trying to avoid him looking in on me and my fiance in the privacy of our intimate moments in our home. Well, come to find out that these people follow you when you leave. I had no idea the guy was this desperate, nor would I have ever guessed that he would have gone through this extreme tactics just to steal intellectual properties. Well, after I got to Ohio, I was swept by a former Navy SEAL. He's a Navy investigations officer. He found the actual frequencies coming out of my body. Well, that prompted me to be a little concerned about the investigator. I was like, I don't know if you're trying to make money off of me or what the deal very well may be, but, you know, I'm not believing that somebody, you know, drugged me and chipped me. So I went to my doctor, and they found it on an MRI in the exact same spot. So to confirm it more, I flew all the way down to Florida, met up with the famous private investigator, William Johnstone Taylor, of the William J. Taylor Agencies in DeLand, Florida, and he confirmed the exact same thing. So I came back all the way to Wichita, Kansas, went to several more doctors, had them read the MRIs. They're all concurring with each other on what is prevalent in my right shoulder. So after that, of course, I became very concerned. I had gotten letters from supporting clinical and PhD psychologists. I had basically crafted a legal arena for myself. That way, when I actually did come out, I would have a fighting chance. So I'd gotten a hold of everybody. We had all concurred. I was catching some flack from my family because I wasn't, you know, being thorough enough as far as they were concerned. So I hired another private investigator to come in behind everybody else and investigate every other professional's claims about the implants, the doctor's backgrounds, investigators, psychologists, the whole nine yards. She found out that every single one of them were telling the truth, without a doubt in her mind. So then we moved to obtain a congressional legislative letter of demand for the removal and extraction of the actual implant in my shoulder. Well, by the time that that has been in the process, there were a lot of typicalities that I share with other victims that have been drugged and chipped, as well as electronic harassment victims, too. So keeping all that in mind, I've been very fluent in studying the majority of the technologies that are involved, involving techniques with or without implants. The majority of my studies have leaned more towards human chipping, as well as biotelemetric acquisitions and things like that, biofeedback relays, and in the areas of any technological advances or older styles of technology of tracking, as well as neural disruptions and nervous system disruptions and amplifications. So that's where my education, as far as the crime is concerned, leans more to. And I do try to pay attention to a personal aspect of it, too, because now I'm starting my own business. We're moving towards non-disclosure agreements with some of the largest beverage companies on the planet. This invention that I've created is worth a lot of money. So we're figuring that all the professionals are all the ones that are involved with investigating the crime, the two private investigators, as well as State Representative Jim Guest's office and Todd Tehart, and the Attorney General here in Kansas have all concluded that without a doubt it's a financial hit. They're trying to discredit me and steal the intellectual property that I've created. I have 12 pieces of intellectual property. 11 of them are patentable right now, and I have one that is completely patented with a design patent, as well as several other patents protecting its state of stability right now. I was suggested by a patent attorney to do that, so that's what I've done to protect my intellectual properties. But now, several years into it, I've heard a lot of claims from a lot of victims about several different styles of techniques, and I have gone through serious rigors to be sure that, you know, if I'm speaking out against it, I'm going to stand in a level room of consistency with other victims' claims and, you know, souls around me. And I have not found any reason for these people to be making these things up. I can't find any progressive sociological application or just a social setting for them to progress by saying these things. I can't imagine somebody lying and making something like this up. It would be completely absurd for a person to think that somebody was lying about being implanted or lying about being a victim. It doesn't make you popular, that's for sure. And it surely is not a tipping stone towards fame either, you know. And the reason I'm touching base on it now is because the amount of people that are listening, the amount of people that do not know what we're speaking of that are listening, these people are very creditable. They're very intelligent. The majority of victims that I'm finding are extremely intellectual. If not, they have master's degrees, they have MBAs, they've got PhDs. I mean, these people are former DOD scientists all the way down to your next-door neighbor as far as layman goes of, you know, professionalism. But and the reason I bring that up, you know, too, is to show the vast span of ability of victimization. Now, as far as, like, types of technology that are concerned, I'm very educated in that area. I know how they do it. The only thing that I can't really explain just yet is, you know, why they're doing it. I have to, you know, kind of stand back and, you know, with the retrospect being 2020, and look back this February, it'll be 9 years since I've been drugged and chipped. I have been all over the country. I cannot find one doctor that will remove this implant from my body at all. They have all issued me letters of support stating that they're in complete agreement and awareness of what they're seeing and marking it as a radio telemetric active foreign body in my shoulder, but none of them want to get involved. And blatantly, they're just scared. And that's exactly what they told me face-to-face, that they are too afraid to get involved for reasons of it being government-propelled, or there could be a facet of government governmental entities that are involved with it. And that very well could be true. As far as I know, my investigators and I, we haven't found any government entities that are directly related to my particular case, but that doesn't take away from illegal experimentation that Deborah was touching base on, as far as MK Ultra, COINTELPRO, just illegal, unpatriotic investigations as such. These programs have been outlined and reiterated in conversations for over 50 years now. If there were no evidence of these particular programs existing, then, of course, you know, I would definitely lean away from the government because and that's just my personal experience. It's not something that I've experienced, and I can't speak on behalf of everyone else. I can only go off of, you know, what I've experienced as an individual. But throughout the years, I've been able to accumulate 12 professionals that are willing to testify for my case, several congressional members, legislative members, and I've also been able to, my case has been responsible for the very first order of protection against electronic tracking, illegal implantation, electronic stalking, as well as electronic eavesdropping. In 2009, I was very successful. I was able to prove in a court of law that not only was the crime happening, but it was happening to myself and thousands of others abroad within the United States of America. So with that happening, I had two eyewitnesses as well as full legislative support and investigatory support, and they went ahead and issued me a protection from electronic stalking as well as a protection from illegal implantation and electronic eavesdropping. From there, the case blew up and went into Wired magazine. To date, there's been 39 million views. It's a very well-known case. After that, it's been Deborah Dupree had posted, and actually she'd done a very large four-part series where she spoke to all the professionals involved in the case for validity and basically backing up what I'm saying, and she posted it on examiner.com. It went to millions of websites. In just a matter of a week, it went viral. Very shortly after that.
Let me ask you a question. How many do you think it is of y'all that they're doing this to?
Well, as far as from what I can tell, you know, it seems to be a vast array of individuals that are being hit with different types of technology. Now, keep in mind, my personal opinion is, and from the research that I've done, I feel that the vast majority of people were either implanted as a very young child or they have, you know, acquired these implants somehow. You know, and I can't say that all victims are implanted, and I would never. You know, I mean, I'm far from being an expert in this, but I do feel that, you know, we could probably confirm at least 10,000 to 15,000 people, and that's nationally and internationally, that have been consistent with Derek Robertson's group, Freedom from Covert Harassment and Surveillance, as well as other minor groups that are also congregating around. And that's just a rough estimation. It's not to say that there aren't more, you know, or there probably could be less, but I'm doubting that there's going to be less.
Very good. You know, when I first heard the story, I was totally shocked. You always say, well, no, that can't be happening. But, you know, after doing my research and also discovering, watching a lot of tapes, going on the Internet, and listen to Mary, Elvira, and all the other people, I'm convinced that this is happening. But now what we got to do, we got to come up with a solution. And I think the more we put it out there, let people know, the better we are. Listen, you got about 90 seconds to say whatever you want, then we got to go into our burn, baby, burn. So you got 90 seconds, take the 90 seconds, and say whatever you want.
Okay, well, thank you for the opportunity. And the closing of any explanations, I would stress education. Education is so important about what is going on. The thing that we've got to realize is that, you know, since my case has been posted, it was responsible for House Bill 550, which transpired into House Bill 2041 in the state of Missouri, for any type of illegal implantation at all. Since those laws have been implemented, what we've experienced is 21 states that have now outlawed illegal drugging and chipping. It seems to be a very large concern, because now we're seeing laws that are being implemented against a particular crime. In California, it's Penal Code 52.7. And the reason for concern is that 5 years ago, if you would have ever mentioned having an implant in your body, they would have locked you up. Now you can pull out a House bill and prove that it's obviously becoming a legislative concern. These are steps that Melinda Kidder and I, she's the owner of Columbia Investigations, and myself, are concluding that we're becoming very concerned, because either one, statutorily speaking, these legislators knew about what was going on. When I start seeing cases explode all over the Internet with millions of websites, it's going to catch somebody's eye. These laws, the majority of them have been passed under emergency measures, which means they were passed without any vote against them, without any legislative motions against them at all. There's an effective date and a date of implementation, and that's it.
Listen, it's 5:30, so we got to cut off. We got to go into our next moment. The person who I'm going to bring on after this is Melinda Brown, but it's going to take about 10 minutes because it is time. It is time. It is time to burn the NAACP cards. We are also going to burn two NAACP hats. I want you to stay on, because we're going to have other people to come on and talk the same identical thing. So just bear with us, because right now is that time that we have to do what we do every Sunday at 5:30. It's burn, baby, burn. It's time to burn your NAACP card, so let's get ready for it. Let's get ready to burn your NAACP card. And I know that you're excited about it. I know that everybody is listening. And I know that we're ready to do what we need to do. Well, just hold on and just bear with me, and we're going to do it right now.
Put this in your pocket.
Yeah. Don't worry, ain't no money in there. You go right in there. So listen, I'm holding up two NAACP hats. Two NAACP hats that I'm holding up. I'm holding up two NAACP hats, one down, one forward. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to count out one, two, three, four, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. I'm going to save this one. And the reason why I'm burning it, here's the list that Whirlpool purchased 350 NAACP cards. And I have everybody named. I wasn't supposed to get this, but I got it. I have the list of 350 NAACP members that Whirlpool purchased in order to overthrow the NAACP here in the city of Benton Harbor. They went down to Detroit to meet with the state president and told the state president that they was interested in supporting the NAACP, but would not support the NAACP under Pinckney leadership. So if you want that money that we're willing to give, you have to get rid of Reverend Pinckney. So today we are going to burn the NAACP hat, and we're only going to burn 17 memberships. I'm going to hold one out just in case I need to burn it next week. So bear with me. Thank you.
coin? Does he have a coin that sometimes has a pushback or a screwdriver?
There you go. Burn, baby, burn. They are going up in flame. And if that's not a beautiful situation, I don't know what is a beautiful situation. The two hats and the membership cards are burning. This is beautiful. This is a tremendous day. This is a day that's going to go down in history. I'm telling you, I'm getting chills all over just the thought of burning these NAACP cards and the two hats, two nice white new hats that have to be burned. I'm happy. This is, I want everybody across the country to stop burning your membership cards, stop burning your hats, T-shirts, jackets, anything that has the NAACP emblem over it. Also, we will be in California February 1st for the Image Awards. We want to make sure that everybody be there. We will set up a boycott and picket the Image Awards. I'm telling you, this is really tremendous. I'm feeling it right now. I hope those out there who made a commitment to burn your cards, to make sure you burn it, because I'm feeling this today. And I want people to know how important it is that we do this. Wow. We have to start holding the NAACP accountable for their action and inaction. The NAACP is a sellout. They're a sellout. And we're going to stop them. We're going to make them either put up or shut up. New rules going to be for now on. We're going to show them that we're not going to take this crap from them no more. They've been pimping our community, taking money for the residents. You pay your $30 and you get nothing. They think it's a privilege to be a member of the NAACP. I disagree 100%. But I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you for all those. We now have 2,617 cards has been burned. That's 2,617 NAACP membership cards that has been burned. And I'm expecting at least another 100 today. I'm expecting people to burn them today because the word was out that we were actually burning hats, and I'm excited. I'm very excited. I mean, I'm thrilled for this to happen. And this will be on YouTube, so brace yourself. That's good. Now we can get back to the show. Thank you.
I didn't know how to turn that on, but I'll give you a copy of the script.
Okay. That'll work.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. You know.
Now you see somebody willing to make a stamp or something.
That's right. You still there, everybody? Just hold on. Yes, it will be on YouTube, so brace yourself. Get that. Oh. Back now, and that mission is complete. I tell you, I am feeling it today. I am feeling it. I am feeling it. Let's. Brenda Brown, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I can hear everything you said, Pastor Pinckney. You is having a great time. I know it has to be a sight to see.
Oh, those hats went up, and it was a large blaze with the membership cards and the hats. It was tremendous. I'm telling you, I'm feeling it.
I can't wait to have that for the to view that on YouTube. How soon do you think you're gonna be posting it?
Yes, I had the media here just a minute ago. They also probably be in the newspaper tomorrow. Also, it'll be on YouTube. We're going to make sure that we get the word out so people can start seeing exactly what we're doing. I'm telling you, Brenda, I am on a high that you will never forget.
I know it had to be a beautiful sight, and I agree with you, Pastor Pinckney, that we have to start holding the NAACP accountable for the condition and state that they have sold us out in. They need to know that people are not going to tolerate this kind of treatment. The NAACP is supposed to be there for the communities to help the people, but instead they're letting the corporations, the big money, the people with all the corporations that have the money to sell us out. That is not right, Pastor Pinckney, and that is what we're not going to tolerate anymore. We have to let them know. They're either going to put up or shut up.
That's right, and we have to tell them. See, a lot of times black people give other black folks a free pass. They think it's all right, but here's where the buck stops. We will no longer allow them to have a free pass.
I think that you it's great what you're doing, and I really admire you for the fact that you will stand up and fight a fight against the NAACP to call them to the carpet, to let them know that we're very much aware of what they have been doing, and that it's just time for people to know what the NAACP have been doing. And you calling them out, Pastor Pinckney, and I really appreciate you for what you're doing. But with that note, I got to let you know that I should have a few people listening out there. Mr. Taylor, I'm going to give you his last four numbers and try to get him on air, because the victors are still here being held hostage in the state of Louisiana. And, you know, people need to know about what's going on here, Pastor Pinckney. It's really bad since Katrina. People were treated so bad here.
Why don't you hold the line? Let me bring on Mr. Taylor. What is his phone number? Give me the last four digits.
704.
304. I don't see him.
You don't see him out there?
Yeah. I do have let me go to the victors.
Okay.
Mr. Victor, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am. How you doing today?
Doing great. I'm feeling good. I just had the opportunity to burn me two NAACP hats and 18 membership cards. So I'm happy today. Matter of fact, I'm feeling so good, and also I got some word for you too. I think that we're heading in the right direction, and we have went to the legal guild, and they did say something. On yesterday, I received a call from one of my attorneys, who said that he might be able to do something, and he can't come down here, but they got other folks that will come, and we're gonna work on that. But I told them we can't wait around. We need them now. We cannot wait.
God bless you. Glory to God. You're absolutely correct. You know, we overdue. We had the 12 hour here, and they're overdue. They're overdue to be revealed.
Yes,
you know,
are.
For who they really are. You know, expose them for what they really are, and they're doing the work of their father. They're lying and everything. This is like the devil was from the beginning, a liar, and we want to expose it all. And get redemption, not just for us, but for others that are in these same predicaments in the state of Louisiana, statewide. And
yeah.
So it's our case is a flagship case for what they are doing on all levels. And they have implemented and imputed all of these unrighteousness into one case, in this one man, Errol Victor and his family. And they've done it all, and civilly, criminally, on every level, you know, from a civil suit against us to a criminal suit against us to the juvenile court. And so you get every element of the wrong that they do in the case of what they're doing to us. And the Lord has put us in this predicament so that they might be exposed. It's the only excuse, the only reason, I'm sorry, that we have for what we are going through and why we are going through it. Because we definitely didn't deserve any of it.
And it they normally know what they're doing. These are professional people. When they come at you, they know that you don't have help. You see, they figure if they drain your resources, you're through dealing. You see, I what you're going through, I've been through. You see, they accused me of threatening George's life. Do you hear what I'm saying? And they sent me to prison for 3 to 10 years. And the ACLU came in and we got it overturned and reversed because they knew what they was doing was wrong. I still spent time in jail. All because the judge said that I had threatened his life, his wife's life, his children's life, his cousin's life, and everybody else. But my point is this. I know how you feel about getting help, but I was fortunate. My big man is a pretty special guy that, you know, people came all out of the woodwork to help, but people that have helped me will eventually help you. I know they will because I really believe that you're innocent.
Thank you.
You see, this is what I'm saying. I believe that you're innocent. I went on the internet and read some of the stuff there, but I know how the newspaper do the stuff. They even quoted in the newspaper, Pinckney threatened Judge's life, knowing that it was not a threat, but yet they tried to convict me even before there was a trial. So I understand where you're at, and I know how hard it is to get people to really help you financially, but I was just fortunate. And right now I have a team of lawyers, but they're up here. If I had somebody down there, believe me, they, you know, if I ask them to help you, they will help. But let's do this. Let me and you, I'm going to give you a number to call. No, I tell you what. You call me, call me tomorrow. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to set up a three-way with this guy, and I want you to talk to him yourself.
Absolutely.
Okay. You can tell him your story. Because he also went on the internet and he read some of the stuff they said in reference to you. But he knows. He knows how this corporate media is. So he didn't, you know, like he told me, he said they'll write anything. Then I used myself as an example, what they said in reference to me, knowing that it was not true, but yet and still. They had convicted me in the newspaper.
Thank God that
we had the appeal court reversed this thing and got me out of there. And that was an amazing feat. But look, I'm not mad at anybody. That gives me the initiative to get out here and stand up for a person like you.
Glory to God. But Brother Minister, I tell you, I thank God for who you are, but they're not representing you. They're misrepresenting you. Mm-hmm. And they're using their resources and the state resources and your own resources to do it against yourself.
Absolutely.
And they're being believable because they have the power to press on their side and they're able to silence you in any way of responding. The media is on their side. It's an instrument of the tool of false prosecution and manufacturing a wrongful conviction. And so what they're representing is a straw man, and they'll place my name to it, which is a character that they've invented. And
absolutely.
So the people, they have a tendency to be led astray in believing these things because they give the credibility and the validity to the newspaper and the media, which they shouldn't have. And the media itself ought to be held accountable for what they're doing deliberately and without any regard to the defendant whatsoever, and becoming an instrument and a tool to be used wrongfully in that manner. And so it's defamation, it's slander. And the lawyers are not equipped. The defense attorney does not defend the defendant against slander and against defamation of character. And they've assassinated your character before you even arrive to court.
Right.
And so you don't have a fair hearing because they've defiled the jury pool and have preemptively convicted you with wrongful testimony concerning your character and who you are.
And you Mr. Victor. And, you know, here's something that's really valuable, too, Mr. Victor, that, you know, we have to see one of the things that we don't do when it don't, if it's not directly us, we don't get involved. You understand that?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
See, we don't,
yes, sir.
We as black folks, I'm talking about black folks because that's what I know about. We don't get involved unless it happened to us directly. Then they want you to drop everything you're doing and help them.
Yeah, well, that's called love, brother. We're not connected in that manner. I mean, that's what love do is connect us. When you're willing to give your life for one another, which was the example of Jesus Christ, then we're willing to do it.
You have 1 minute
left. So we know that faith without works is dead. And so, you know, the word activist, the root word is act.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we put an I-O in on it, it's called action. So we got to do. You know, and not just speak, but we got to put action behind what it is that we believe.
Absolutely, and I believe that too. But listen, why don't you come back later in the show? I'll give you a few more minutes, and let's talk some more. Let me move on.
God bless.
All right, God bless you now.
God bless. Glory to God.
Libby Hunter, are you there?
No. That isn't my name, but I think I know what you mean.
Go right ahead.
Okay. I'm going to read from bhbanco.org. That's Benton Harbor, bhbanco.org. And it's, let's see, 10 reasons why Joseph L. Harris, emergency financial manager, should be immediately terminated. And further details will be discussed at the November 19th, that's tomorrow, Benton Harbor City Commission meeting. The 10th reason, inaccurate and deceitful communications. Mr. Harris has repeatedly proclaimed in public meetings to the media, to elected leaders and staff, and to state officials that the city of Benton Harbor had a balanced budget and cash surplus. The 2011 audit recently revealed that the city actually had a budget deficit of approximately $565,000 under Mr. Harris's leadership in 2011. Meanwhile, city contractors and or vendors are not being paid in a timely fashion. Harris has either A, intentionally deceived the citizens and stakeholders, or B, his ignorance regarding the true fiscal condition of the city confirms his incompetence. 9, the city sued due to non-payment. Mr. Harris negotiated and executed a very poor contract with Benton Township without input or conversation with city executive senior staff, elected leaders, or key community stakeholders and or customers. The contract, A, forfeited in excess of $300,000 of receivables due to the city of Benton Harbor from Benton Township, while B, agreeing to make monthly payments to the township that are not fiscally cost prohibitive based upon water revenues. Mr. Harris signed this agreement and accepted a settlement of approximately $300,000 for a debt owed of more than $700,000. He denied the monies were owed, then agreed to a meeting with Benton Township officials to discuss the matter. And at that meeting, it was disclosed that Harris had settled the matter for less than 50 cents on a dollar. It was also disclosed that he accepted and deposited a check from Benton Township that he did not remember. All of this occurred while he failed to increase the water rates in a timely manner as required according to the city's state bond agreement. Benton Township is now suing for the unpaid portion of this terribly suspect contract. 8, gross fiduciary negligence. Now, we're reading backwards, by the way, so that's the way this article is set up. So 10 is first, then 9 we just read, and now we have number 8. Gross fiduciary negligence. Mr. Harris failed to exercise the city's rights under the terms and conditions of the HUD 105 Business Development Loan Program contract to collect the nearly $500,000 in loan defaults accrued by three companies. Mr. Harris failed to take any legal remedy to collect the unpaid loans while agreeing to a settlement to pay the defaulted loan balances back to the federal government 100% plus interest and penalties. As per the HUD contract, Mr. Harris could have A, sued the companies in default, B, placed liens on the company's property. There were other legal remedies available under Michigan state law that Mr. Harris could have pursued, yet refused to. Consequently, because of Mr. Harris's negligence, these companies were able to liquidate and sell real property and other assets and keep 100% of the proceeds without repaying a single dollar to the city of Benton Harbor on what is still a pending outstanding obligation. One of the companies sold property to Cornerstone Alliance for an amount sufficient to repay the city the outstanding 105 loan balance in full. Now, what I think I might do is just read the beginning of each of these because this is really long.
It is long. It's too long. So, yeah, just read one line. Why don't you do this? Read, where are you at, on seven now?
I'm just going to read the beginning of each one, you know what
no,
I mean?
No, why don't you do this? Just read seven and six, and next week read one, two, three, four, five.
Okay.
Yeah.
Seven, wasteful spending. Mr. Harris has unilaterally decided to squander limited city resources during this fiscal crisis on frivolous and unnecessary items such as, one, I love Benton Harbor souvenir cups and T-shirts, two, ice rinks, three, ice skates, four, unused vehicles, five, furniture, six, remodeling, seven, playground equipment, eight, water fountains, nine, excessive raises and salary increases, and much more. Although Mr. Harris is required by law to provide financial reports regularly, city officials have been unable to secure any aging reports that substantiate or confirm the magnitude and or depth of the wasteful spending and delinquent bill payment. Mr. Harris's refusal to comply with Public Act 4 and provide the types of period and critical financial report, periodic maybe, and critical financial reports is completely unacceptable and a clear abuse of power. Six, negligent management of NSP grant funding. Prior to Harris's arrival in the city was a recipient of an NSP grant of nearly $4 million. NSP was created to A, clean up blighted neighborhoods, B, stimulate local and minority small business contracting, and C, housing development, and D, create jobs under the HUD Section 3 program. Mr. Harris abdicated, relinquished, and or forfeited the city's moral and contract obligations to Harbor Shores, Cornerstone Alliance, and or Michigan Works. These three entities are amongst the city's wealthiest and most privileged people and or companies in Benton Harbor, and surely were not the type of people or organizations NSP was intended to help. Mr. Harris placed the city grant in a use-it-or-lose-it situation regarding the NSP funding by failing to administer, implement, and obligate the grant funds in a timely manner. Consequently, at the zero hour, the decision was made to grant the funds to the wealthy and to complete Harbor Town and the firehouse developments, both owned and managed by Cornerstone Alliance. Neither project is expected to produce any meaningful sustainable jobs or any significant affordable housing for the city of Benton Harbor or its residents. So that's it, and then I'll do the rest of them next week.
Very good. Really appreciate that. I'm glad you're putting that out there, and thank you so much. And listen, you didn't get a chance to hear Burn Baby Burn, did you? You didn't get a chance to hear, or it's going to be on YouTube. The media was here today just a minute ago, and they videotaped and filmed and interviewed me in reference to the cars being burned. 18 membership cards were burned. Those were membership cards that I received from the people, Whirlpool people, who had decided to burn their cars also. But listen, I got to move on. Thank you so much, Livy. I want you to have a real good day, and I wish you could listen, hold on and listen in.
Okay.
All right, then. Denise Johnson, are you there?
Yes. Hello, Reverend Pinckney.
Hey, how you doing, Denise? How's everything?
Good. Everything's good. I'm blessed.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Well, talk to me, Denise. How things have been going?
Well, I've sent the of the report to your lawyer, Reverend. Robin Yeamans,
yes,
in San Jose, and she has a committee that's going over and seeing what they can find in the pieces of the campus report. Since I talked to you last, Reverend Harris came from Fresno, and he was ready, willing, and able to set up a protest.
Yes, that's my
plan. The 4th anniversary of the killing of my son at San Jose State University. And but that was put on hold until, because, you know, I understand, I was listening to your program early, and you talking about a pain control thing that goes on. And I'm a perfect example. My case is a perfect example of that. There are a lot of people that didn't know that my son was murdered in San Jose State 4 years ago. There are a lot of people that didn't even know anything about the murder, anything about what they claimed, because they claimed it was a suicide, although we know it was a murder because he had a crack in the back of his head and his neck was broken and he didn't have any indication that he hung himself. He had no ligature marks. So all this was kept quiet from the city of information. You see, San Jose is the city of information. You have Facebook down there. You have Yahoo. You have all kinds of McAfee is down there. You have all kinds of software companies that are down there, and it's called the Silicon Valley. And but this information was kept from that community, and when it happened, there some people went down on my behalf and wanted to know exactly, you know, what was going on down there. And they had been instructed by the president of the university, John Whitmore. At that time, he was the president of the university. They had been instructed to be quiet and not to say anything about what happened to my son. This was students who were instructed and teachers. This is a closed society down there. And all of this is a perfect example of a city that is controlled by the FBI, by the closed-down media, okay, because there's only certain things they report. Reverend Pinckney, there's a woman down there named Ellen Pascal, and
yes,
she works with the attorney Yeamans, Robin,
yes,
Yeamans, and she's wrote the Metro Active about what happened to my son, who did write it. They did write, Jessica Fromm wrote an article about my son. And you know she hasn't heard from that paper, period, since she sent that article in a few weeks ago. And she hasn't heard anything, no response. And she's representing several organizations that want to know the truth about,
yes,
the murder of Gregory Johnson.
Wow. And you know, like, when tell us a little bit where they found him and tell us how tall he was. Tell the people so they need to know this.
On November 22nd, 2008, the police came to my house in Clear Lake, California. The Clear Lake police told me that my son was dead. They told me my son committed suicide by hanging, by ligature hanging. Well, it took me 13 days to see his body. No one would let me view his body at the coroner's office. No one would step up to the plate and do what is right. They were hiding what happened to him. Well, when I got him to the funeral home, because I had to raise money to have the funeral home pick his body up and bring him back here so that I could see him, he had a 6-inch long crack on the back of his head, and his neck was broken, but it wasn't staying. He had no marks on his neck. No ligature marks. The autopsy mentioned non-existent ligature marks, 16 and 17 inches long, a half inch wide,
and they mentioned a crack. They did not mention the crack. They mentioned non-existent ligature marks and no crack. So the autopsy was fake. It was conjured up. And they floated this story that my son had killed himself. It's been 4 years on the 22nd. I still have no complete report, only the campus report, and there were many entities, law enforcement. There was the San Jose City Police report I didn't get, the FBI report I didn't get. This case went all the way to Washington, D.C. It was a cover-up from the beginning. It was covered up. What happened to my son down there was covered up. And lies were told. And still, the president of the school is no longer there. The chief of police, Andre Burns, was immediately transferred. Val Phillips is no longer there. Larry Carr is no longer there. And then recently I found out, Reverend Pinckney, that the coroner is dead.
Wow.
The coroner who did the autopsy is dead. Glenn V. Victor Nazareno, he's dead.
I tell you, you know what? We know what happened, but we're gonna get the truth sooner or later. We want to get closure for you, and that's what we're working on.
Thank you, Reverend. Thank you. And your work is being seen on this day all across the United States. Your work is touching people who otherwise who had no help. I didn't have any. God is always my helper.
Yes.
He's always a help in the time of trouble, ever-present help. But sometimes we have to stand in the gap when we have a society that is ready to believe a lie or just decide, like you said, Reverend, if it doesn't happen to you, you don't believe it.
That's right. If it don't happen, you
don't
believe it. You know, I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you for standing up fighting. And we need more people like you. And I tell you one thing, you got Reverend Harris out there who's a very, very good friend of mine. You got Robin. You got my whole gang out there. And they're going to do whatever they can to help. And if for some reason they can't help, they're going to call me or email me and let me know what's going on at all times. But look, I really appreciate you. I plan on being in L.A., though, February the 1st, for the Image Award. I would like for you and Reverend, I know Reverend Harris coming down, and some of the others from that area, I would love for you to join us in Hollywood, California, February the 1st.
Yes, sir, we'll be there.
All right, thank you. Well, listen, you got about 60 seconds to say whatever you want, and I got to move on.
Yes, we're still asking anybody that can help to please come in, a pathologist, come in and do a second autopsy, a righteous pathologist who's going to tell the truth on my son. He's buried, and that can happen. You know, we're asking anybody to come in that can offer some information about what happened to my child. You know, why the truth isn't being told, because I still have his bits and pieces. And I just want to thank you again, Reverend Pinckney. I want to thank Reverend Harris. I want you truly soldiers in this army, in the army of the Lord. And I just want to thank you.
Hey, and you know what? And I thank you for hanging in there. And listen, we're going to get this thing right. Well, listen, I got to bring on my dear friend, Randy. Randy Short,
okay,
are you there?
Go on.
Randy Short,
yes,
are
I'm
you there?
I'm here.
How you
I'm
doing,
blessed.
Randy? How you feeling?
I'm feeling good. I have Reverend Moore and Reverend Jahi Issa on the phone with me, and I wanted the audience to hear the report from Reverend Dr. Jahi Issa, because he wants to tell you that if you have your faith in anything other than God and the righteous people, and you think the NAACP cares, he's got a story if he's still on the line. Are you there, Dr. Issa?
Yes, sir. I'm very much here.
He has to tell you guys a story that has happened not 10 years ago, not 15 years ago, not 100 years ago, but within the last week, how the NAACP responds to hearing that black people are missing, murdered, and being lynched. Without further ado, the martyred professor fired unfairly by Delaware State University, Dr. Jahi Issa. Tell him.
Yes, thank you, Brother Randy, and I'm happy to be on Reverend Pinky's show finally. And I'll get straight to it. Yesterday, someone called me in the morning and said that I should come to the regional NAACP meeting in Dover, Delaware, where all of the state-elected officials of the NAACP, including the president, the vice president, the secretary, and all of the regional presidents, the state presidents, will be there for a five-hour training that was to be conducted by Mr. David Bing. David Bing, who is the regional director of the NAACP. He's over about five states in the Pacific Northeast. He got there pretty late. It was supposed to start at 11. He didn't get there until 12. He ends up leaving. He gets there at 12. He talks for about 10 minutes. I interjected and talked about my former barber being lynched at a park where me and my family were frequently going. We talked about the abduction and attempted lynching of another young man who I knew, and other things, and why the state NAACP refused to help. This man talked for about 10 minutes, said that they were going to get on this immediately. He went into a back room. I assumed that he went and called Ben Jealous. He came out of the room 4 minutes later. He ran out of the church building, never to be seen again. What was interesting, though, he left out, ran out so quick that the state president of the NAACP, we were all expecting this man to conduct a seminar, workshop on, you know, how to get resources and how to organize for the NAACP. Everybody started asking, where did he go? I thought maybe he just stepped off to have another conversation with the president, maybe with Ben Jealous, but he never came back. He gave me his number before he left. I called him 7 times yesterday. He never returned my call. I called him at 10 o'clock this morning using another person's cell phone number, and he said he'll call me back in 10 minutes. I haven't heard from him.
Wow.
The great thing is that I recorded the entire conversation when he promised that he would help. He would get Ben Jealous involved. But I think when Ben Jealous called the Attorney General of Delaware, who was Mr. Bo Biden, the son of the Vice President of the United States, and Bo Biden refuses to do anything about this, he refused to even acknowledge that black men are hanging on trees. He was told to get the hell up out of Delaware. And so now the official story from the state is that these black men are hanging themselves and committing suicide, in which I am saying if this is the case, if we have an epidemic of black men hanging themselves on oak trees.
And that's impossible. That's completely impossible, because you and I both know that when we were talking to Robin, the girlfriend of a gentleman, Johnny Clark, that these devils allowed her to listen to him strangulate as they strangled and hung him on the cell phone. And we also know that people have possibly broken into her storage unit and taken the telephone so she would have no records of the picture she's taken. These people are operating on a high state level. And I'll go one step further. People don't want to hear this, but Bo Biden cannot be touched, because Bo Biden, in 2008, either July or June, arrested a man by the name of Larry Sinclair, who gave a report at the National Press Club that he had sexual relations with President Obama. Nobody can touch him. Nobody can touch him. The Attorney General of Delaware comes all the way to Washington, D.C., and arrests a person and takes them and puts them in jail in Delaware. That's illegal, but that's what was done.
Right.
So no one can touch. Now, it's interesting. If
hey,
everything
Randy,
that Mr. let Sinclair
him finish, so we don't have much time.
Sure.
Mm. Go ahead, Doctor.
Well, I'm just listening. You know, my trial begins December the 4th, and my trial is centered around this lynching because I believe that part of the reason why I was arrested at Delaware State in March the 1st is because the students had a rally the day before, the day I was arrested, on finding the perpetrators who put out a white supremacist flyer saying that they were going to lynch one nigga at a time.
Mm.
And so the state knows about this, but yet they arrested me because they felt that the students at the university were going to bring a lot of attention to the issue of lynchings in Delaware during the presidential election. And this is the home of the vice president.
Well,
and
listen, doctor, what can we do to help you?
He needs a defense fund. He's been fired from the university. He needs money. He needs support to help his family during this period because, as he said, he's been fired. We need to create a defense fund for our fighter. Now, he can tell you how to contact him, but that's what's needed immediately because he even had the only black newspaper in the state telling the truth, and they've effectively shut that down.
Wow.
He needs support so he can renew, both help get any support he can for his legal case, but as well to be able to put that paper back together that was reaching thousands of people, and this is another reason he's being persecuted.
Is the trial going to begin December the 4th, or is that just a hearing?
No, the trial begins December the 4th. Right here in Dover, Delaware. You can go to my website, hbcuinstitute.org, if anybody wants to make a donation. That's hbcuinstitute.org. You can also go to War on the Horizon. That's War on the Horizon, and you will see, click on the War Room, and you will see the full documentary of several people here in Dover testifying about the lynchings here, one person's mother, one guy who was abducted and he got away. He's now in jail. They put him in jail.
To silence him. They intimidate people, and we need to know that there's a black woman that was murdered under suspicious circumstances last week, and another black man has disappeared. This is an ongoing tragedy.
Well, we really need to get this out there. I understand that you're going to trial on the 4th. Why don't you ask my audience to send you something? Just tell them to send you a donation for your defense fund and tell them where you want them to send it to.
Yes, if they want to, they can go to my website, HBCU Institute.org. If they want to send it in the mail, if they want to send a check in the mail, send it to 1300 South Farm View Drive, Dover, Delaware, Unit 813, zip code 19904.
Okay. But listen, what we're going to do, we're going to try to send you a little something ourselves. And we'll see what happened. But, hey, if you get a chance, give me a call tomorrow night after 7.
I will do, Reverend.
All right, you got my number and everything. So, listen, I got to bring on Mary. And we don't have a whole lot of time, but if I can, I'll bring you back. Mary, are you there?
I am here, Reverend Pinckney. What a show today. I could see you, sir, burning those hats, burning those cards, burning the NAACP in effigy. We need to burn that crooked organization out of our lives. The main thing is people of goodwill who want to help people are helping the NAACP in our names, and we are not getting the help they're paying for, sir. And that is the thing. Money that should go to helping black people who are in critical need is going to the NAACP, and these people will push you down to the ground, just like Ben Jealous attacked me in Atlanta, Georgia, on September 17, 2011, at the March to Save Troy Davis. He pushed me down because I suggested that we boycott for justice. You know, it's fine to march, it's fine to sing, but nothing really affects our oppressors but their money. Nothing affects them but their money. That's why I salute you, sir, for having a successful boycott, an ongoing boycott. Please keep in mind, everybody, this Christmas season, that we are boycotting Whirlpool and all Whirlpool-made products because they're making life intolerable for the people of Benton Harbor, Michigan. Also, I want to say, sir, we've had a great week for the mentally ill in America. Our most oppressed people in America are not a particular race, even though black mentally ill people still get it worse, but it's the mentally ill. But this week, George Allen was freed from 30 years in a Missouri prison. He was a mentally ill man that the police falsified evidence on. But Judge Dan Green reversed Allen's conviction upon DNA tests by the Innocence Project, and this man is step-free after 30 years on death row. So congratulations, Judge Green. We appreciate you for getting this poor man out of prison where he had been for 30 years. They elicited a false confession from George Allen just because he was mentally ill. And, yes, our people who will stand up are being railroaded into jail whenever possible. Carl Dix and 12 other people are facing jail time in New York for protesting stop and frisk. That apartheid thing they have going on in New York where they just stop people and frisk them down if they're black or Latino. And so Carl Dix and a group of other people, 12 others, are on trial for protesting stop and frisk. I tell you right now, I'm not in New York, but I protest it too. And I say we need to start standing up. And all of these people who say they're stalked, you need to stalk them back. Stop running around being scared of these devils and stand up with the power of God and follow that stalker home. And the next day you be in front of that stalker's house with a sign. Expose these dirty people. And if the government won't help you, the police won't help you, go and stalk them. I go and protest in front of the jailhouse. I protest in front of the courthouse. I protest in front of CNN. I got my pictures online. That's Mary Neal, protest CNN. I'd stalk them back. Stop running from these devils and go face them like Reverend Pinckney is going to stalk the NAACP on February 1st in Los Angeles. Go and stalk these devils back and stop running and hiding from them. They're nothing but devils, and God said resist the devil and he will run from you. Every Sunday when I'm on the air, the stalkers gather up on their porches. They gave them houses around me. Oh, yes, they have. I hope they enjoy them because I wave at them. I ain't thinking about them. And so we need to stop being scared of the oppressor, and we need to do what God said and stand up to the oppressor. We have systemic racism in the United States of America. There's a film on YouTube called Systemic Racism in USA. Mary Neal is on it. This is just a promo for the documentary that was done by Press TV. So go on YouTube and look at Systemic Racism in USA, Mary Neal, and you will see that little promo film. Please put a comment on it because Iran is concerned about these people bombing it. These many countries are concerned about being bombed for human rights. And so they decided to expose some of the human rights violations that happen in America, like the secret arrest and murder of my mentally and physically disabled brother, Larry Neal, a murder that's covered up by the U.S. DOJ, the United States Department of Justice, and the Memphis Shelby County Jail. They think they have it locked down. I became a COINTELPRO subject when I sued the Cochran firm That's another dirty COINTELPRO operation that is operating falsely in the name of Johnny Cochran. Another good news report about mentally ill people is that Otto Zim, who was killed up there in Spokane, Washington, his killer is going to jail. Officer Carl Thompson Jr., 65 years old, he's spending 4 years and 3 months in prison because this poor white man who was a janitor, mentally ill, went to the store to buy a Snicker bar. They said that they thought he wanted to rob the ATM. They just love to kill mentally ill people. They hit him 7 times with a baton in 8 seconds, stunned him. Then some more police came and hog-tied Otto Zim, sat on top of him, and choked him darn near to death. He died 2 days later. But that police officer who beat him and stunned him, he's in jail today because the judge told them to put him in jail immediately. They're not going to leave him out and wait on the people. Thank you for that. I tell you, we are standing up for the mentally ill. We're standing up for black people who are being mistreated in Benton Harbor. We're going to stand up for the people being lynched over there in Delaware. We're standing up. We're not afraid. We are standing up and standing tall. The San Francisco Board of Mental Health passed a resolution. No tasers for the San Francisco Police Department. 99.5% of the people surveyed strongly disagreed with tasers in the police officers' hands because they kill so many mentally ill people with these tasers. And it's just a darn shame. They love to kill the mentally ill. And I tell you, Hitler hated people who looked just like him. So there may be a similarity there. Maybe a lot of our police officers have mental problems, and they hate people who are mentally ill like they are. Maybe that's what's going on. Markel Hutchins versus Sarah Dozier. We got more victimization going on regarding the murder of a 92-year-old Atlanta woman named Catherine Johnston. They are just persecuting her family now. This man named Markel Hutchins, a black preacher here in Atlanta, can you believe he's trying to sue the family for $500,000 because he did a few press conferences for them? Now that they won their little settlement, which was nothing like what they were supposed to get if the Cochran firm didn't have the case and kept it out of court and arranged a little settlement on a lawsuit they never did file. No lawsuit was ever filed. That's just a darn lie. But this man who did a few press conferences for them is now suing the family of Catherine Johnston for $500,000. And, you know, we've been talking about the government spy program. And I tell you, the CIA has come out with it now. And they are seeking permission to spy on Americans through your cable TV. They said they're ready to transform surveillance and the spies can watch through the supercomputers, and they can watch thousands of people at one time in their home. If you got a TV in your bedroom and you married, they want to watch you have sex. They want to watch you eat dinner. They want to listen to what you say in the privacy of your home. And they're coming out with it now. They're no longer lying about it. They want to spy on everybody. Obama is beginning to push to nationalize the nation's retirement system. He wants to take over your 401k and your retirement funds. Even we're not just talking about Social Security. We're talking about your private pension funds and your personal 401k plans. The president of the United States, who you reelected, is coming after your money. He's coming after your 401k plans, and he's coming after your retirement funds. But that's all right with the people who elected him, I suppose.
So Mary, you got about 30 seconds to say what you want.
Okay, well, I thank you, Reverend Pinkney. I thank you for being the type of man who stand up. Now, I'm supposed to be on Lawless America movie with this. Bill Windsor put out that he is going to stop taping 3 days before he taped Mary Neal. Now, he says it's for security and safety reasons. The thing is that I'm going to make sure I film myself and send it to Bill Windsor, and unless something is mighty wrong, I will be looking at you from lawless America, unless something is mighty wrong, because I'm going to film myself and send it to him. Hopefully, they are not particularly scaring him to death, because he's going to blow the roof off the secret murder of Larry Neal and the oppression of 1.25 million mentally ill people who are wrongly incarcerated for their health disabilities.
All right.
Thank you, Reverend Pinkney.
And thank you so much, Mary. We just about ran out of time, but I'm going to bring on Belinda Brown, bring her back, and I'm going to bring let Randy Short ends it. Go ahead, Belinda Brown, do whatever you want.
Yes, Pastor Pinkney, I'm telling you, this is outrageous what's going on here with the victors, and we need all the help that we can get. You know, just listening to the other people, Mary, I'm telling you, hit the head. The nail right on the head. We got to help each other. We got to stick together, and we got to fight back against this kind of injustice. Pastor Pinkney, it's Mr. Taylor on the phone. His last three numbers, could you check those last three numbers,
7304? Unfortunately, I don't see it.
Okay, he probably held on as long as he could. But I'm going to try to get him to call in next week so that you can give him a chance, an opportunity to talk about what's going on here in the state of Louisiana. We are in serious trouble here. We need all the help that we can get.
Belinda, you want to tell everybody about your issue, about what y'all doing on Tuesday?
Yes, I do. I'm going to tell you, Pastor Pinkney, I'm excited about it because, you know, the criminal justice system here in Louisiana is notorious for locking people up, especially the minority. And Louisiana have more people incarcerated than anywhere else in the world. And as you listen to the stories of the victors, these people will do anything, by any means necessary, to get a conviction. They would break every constitutional law that it is, and they would practice their own law here, do whatever they want to do to get a conviction, because prison is big money. Here in the parish that I live in, it's 98.9 conviction rate. These people are convicting people just by making up fabricated concoct lies against them, making them, forcing them to plead guilty, threatening them, badgering them to plead guilty to crimes that have not been committed, just so that they can get a conviction rate and lock these people up to get the money. So here on Tuesday, we have got the ear of the U.S. Department of Justice in Washington, D.C. They're coming down to meet with us in regards to how the mentally ill are being treated inside of the jails, how a lot of people are being railroaded and jacked up through the justice system here. And, you know, in regards to the mentally ill, they beat one young man so bad, they beat him inside the jail, tasered him and tortured him, you know, while he was in there. Put him inside the holding with, they call it like a holding cell before you get booked, with at least about 35, 40 other people. A fight breaks out, and the young man, you know, was dangerously injured. Now, I'm going to tell you, Pastor Pinkney, it gets worse than that. Some of the stories here are just absolutely horrible. I mean, the police brutality, you know, the police are beating people down here in the street, strip searching them butt naked, making them, you know, just, you know, planting drugs, all kinds of crazy stuff is happening here, especially during the election. A lot of voter suppression, a lot of people were being just locked up and railroaded into the jails by the hundreds just so that they would not have the opportunity to vote. It's really bad here in Louisiana, Pastor Pinkney. We need help.
But listen, Belinda, you know, every week I'm, you know, give you an opportunity to say a few words and just let people know we got to keep spreading the word because the audience is getting larger and larger right now. Even my board is so big that I can't hardly handle it myself, but I may have to ask for some assistance on this, but it's almost too big for me. But listen, I got to
know that
Randy
people
Short
are listening.
I don't have a final word, but Belinda, I will be talking to you soon, and I'm gonna see what kind of help I can get for the victors, and I'll know something tomorrow what we're gonna be able to do. But listen, I got to bring on Randy Short. Go right ahead, Randy.
I'm here. Look, Reverend Pinkney, the main thing that I want to emphasize in this discussion, for the brief moment that I have, is that, like the sister was saying before, once they put people within these prisons, God knows what they do to them. You and I had a discussion about a gentleman who we had helped, Afdel Leach, and we know that whatever they put him through in that system, he snapped and broke this week, and now he's back in. I want to thank everybody that pitched in to try to intervene, but we need to understand we must overturn this system, because once you put a person through that, they're never the same. They're never the same. We're losing our young and old and middle-aged people, whoever it is that goes within those systems, because we don't really know all of what this young man experienced to cause him, a person who had never had any trouble before, to go out and do a reckless act of vandalism because he's so outraged. And it's insane for us to think that we can teach our children to somehow endure and not get angry and understand that the world's supposed to treat us like subhumans and someone not get angry. The answer isn't in one case at a time, but a need for us to commit ourselves to getting rid of the system. And that sort of segues into what you and I discussed earlier. We want your prayers and support. We are going to write, I'm going to write it, a letter calling for the NAACP and the other black leaders and the black churches to repent for being absent at the wheel while our people have suffered. They have missed every major significant issue that's impacted us for the last 50 years almost. And yet they've gotten richer and richer and more noticeable and more famous and more everything, but less and less is being done, whether we're losing our homes, whether we're losing our families, whether they're experimenting on us. And we also need to ask them, how can they be in allegiance with people who are diametrically opposed to our survival, our very existence, and be our leadership? We really need to start demanding that there be a spiritual reformation in this country, especially among those who claim to be spiritual, political, or social leaders. I would say at this point, we need a spiritual revolution, and we also need a civil war against inept, immoral, and degenerate black leadership. We need to make 2013 the year that we remove these people. We need a regime change in black America. We need to retire all the people who think that they can pimp the struggle for personal gain while the rest of us are destroyed. I hope you pray for me and pray for this entire movement that we are successful, because we're going all the way. We're going to go to the Image Awards. We're going to go everywhere we have to go to let it be known. It's a new regime, a regime of righteousness, a regime of hope, and a regime of change over one of greed, selfishness, and individualism. That's my comment for today.
And I'm going to say that that is tremendous. I want everybody to know that we are boycotting all Whirlpool products. You can go to bhbanco.org and learn which product that we are. Also, we are boycotting the NAACP. If you have a membership card, if you have a membership card, we are expecting you to burn it. As of now, we got 2,718 cars, and I am expecting to burn 290 cars of the ones that Whirlpool purchased for the membership here in the city of Benton Harbor. I'm going to try to burn every last one of them, but the ones that actually working for Whirlpool against the people. So we had a good day today. I got a chance to burn 18 NAACP cars, plus, here's the good news, plus two NAACP caps. And on that note, we are going to have to say goodnight to everybody. I really enjoyed it today. I think the show was tremendous. Chance to do some incredible things. And I tell you, I'm just excited. And I will
Pastor Pickney, I need to talk one more time.
What's up? What's up?
Hello.
Right. Good night, everybody.
Pastor Pickney.
What is it?
Everybody is being asked to boycott Walmart on Black Friday.
Okay, so we would boycott Walmart also on Friday.
Boycott Walmart.
Walmart. We got Walmart, too. Walmart, Whirlpool, we got them all.
Okay.
Remember this, everybody out there, that we are now boycotting Walmart, Whirlpool, and the NAACP. So let's
on
get
Friday,
it together.
On Friday, for Black Friday.
That's it, this Friday. Black Friday, it is going down. So listen, good night, everybody.
Good night.
We're talking about a revolution. Good night, everybody. We're talking about a revolution. Good night, everybody.
Revolution.
Talking about a revolution.